We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into the Denver Sports Podcast. We're presented by Breckenridge Brewery. Sorry, I didn't give you time for the air horn there.
I don't do the air horn on the show. I got confused.
Maybe that's what the show's missing.
Maybe.
We're presented by Breckenridge Brewery, the official beer of DNVR. Thank you, Kale. The beer of the month here at the DNVR bar. I think it's the Avalanche Ale. Is it?
That was a good guess, I feel like.
It is... Testing. 1, 2, 3. The Avalanche Ale. Boom. Pick it up at the DNVR bar. If you don't know where to get Breck Brew, check out their beer locator online. Harrison Wind, joined by my guy, Brendan Vogt. Thanks for joining me, man.
What's up, man? This counts as early for me and Harrison as far as shows go. This is basically 6 in the morning.
What people don't get is NBA people, you know, NBA players, and I'm grouping us into that category.
That's right.
We're not morning people.
No.
We're night people. That's why, you know, you always hear NBA players in their schedule. They take naps throughout the day. Mm. They go to shoot around, get some shots up, take a nap, then go back to the arena for the game. You know, I like to think of myself in that group of people.
We're creatures of habit and rhythm, just like the players, you know, and our routine's very important to us.
Yeah. I had a rough morning, though. Had to drop by a Starbucks and get a big-ass tea.
A tea?
Yeah.
What's wrong? Are you not a coffee guy these days?
No, I'm a coffee guy. It just was one of those days where I just needed like a very sugary tea in my life, I felt like.
I get that. I actually, not to rub it in, I got up and worked out and made a green smoothie this morning.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I worked out so hard. I was 5 minutes late for your show. I apologize. That's how hard I was working out. So now everyone knows what it's like for me.
What are you doing? Cardio, weights, both?
A little bit of everything, dude. I stretch too. Told you I'm big into stretching now.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Well, I'm 30, dude. You know how it goes.
I'm 32.
It's downhill fast. So I'm just trying to fight it off.
I'm impressed, man.
Thanks, man. Well, it's one day. Let's see how tomorrow goes.
Okay. First day of working out?
First day of working out and making a smoothie.
Hey, man. I'm excited for you.
Thank you.
This is awesome.
This is the time of year
we should track this.
You lock in, right? You come back from the All-Star break, like Michael Porter Jr. says. Yep. Everyone knows before the All-Star break, everyone's secretly just waiting for the All-Star break. Once it's gone, then it's really time to dial in.
Yeah. Well, I've got you on the show to talk about Michael Porter Jr. I could think of nobody better to talk about Michael Porter Jr. with than you. Well, maybe him would be good, but
maybe
you're probably second.
Yeah, I might be more excited about it than him.
But yeah, you mentioned the All-Star break for him. He comes back from Cabo, I think. Might have lost his phone over the All-Star break, mm-hmm. but comes back from Cabo without phone and with a tan and has been playing great. You know, comes back against the Wizards, 22 points, 11 rebounds, 34 points against Portland, 12 rebounds. Had a bad game against Golden State, 9 points, 7 rebounds. But these last three have been solid again. 14 points against the Kings. Denver didn't really need it. Then 30 against Miami and 25 against the Lakers on perfect shooting. What's been your biggest takeaway from this latest stretch of Michael Porter's season?
How he's looked physically. He is moving really well. And he said at practice yesterday that he's feeling pretty energetic. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. To me, I just thought he was particularly spry on the second half of a back-to-back against the Heat. He's been really active defensively and on the glass. And I wonder how much of it for him, and I don't even know if this is conscious or not, but how much of it for him, you know, with his health and his history and his back across a long season, there is a bit of picking spots, you know? And he's even said you'd like to say you're bringing it every night. Some nights you just don't have it. But I think coming out of the break, he's just particularly locked in, as he said. My favorite theory, though, and this isn't really a theory because he's confirmed it, is just that he needed a little sun.
Yeah.
He needed a little sun.
And I like this theory.
I like this because I think it might be that simple for Michael Porter Jr. I think there's a chance he conceivably never saw the Jokic text, that this has nothing to do with rhythm or rest or where his head. He just wanted to get some sun, and he got a tan, and now he's good again.
The tan looks great.
It does.
I don't know if I've ever seen a player pull off a tan like this.
It happens quick for him.
Yeah. It's still there too.
I know.
It's faded a little bit, but I don't think it's faded completely, which is pretty impressive considering the All-Star break was back on the 21st. This is like a 3-week tan going right now. But he's been awesome. And the Laker game was just kind of a punctuation on that. 25 points and 10 rebounds on perfect shooting. My biggest takeaway from this stretch of his season, and I think this is developing into the theme of Michael Porter's season. Last year, I thought the theme was defense. I thought the theme of his season last year was Michael Porter becoming not just a competent defender, but an above average defender, average to above average.
Yep.
And I think he's held that line this season. My thinking on his theory for this year, though, is it's that he's rounding into a complete scorer. That's what I think the theme of this season for him is. He's got the three-point shot. He already had a bit of the mid-range, but I think we're even seeing more of that this year.
I agree.
But the biggest thing is we're seeing him get to the rim and finish there and look really comfortable doing that. What do you think about that?
I agree with you, and I think maybe my best example of that growth is this floater that he's fallen in love with. And it doesn't look great aesthetically, mm-hmm. but it's going in. And he has touch, and he's tall, and there's margin for error on that shot. He talked about that at practice as well. You know, you get friendly rolls if you really have that nice touch. And for a guy who, depending on how he's feeling physically, you know, how many minutes he's been playing recently, how explosive he is at the rim, that's going to vary across 82 games. There are going to be nights where it's not particularly. But so to have a kind of to have a finish near the rim, right, that's kind of an in-between loading up for a big dunk or a layup and his three-pointer or his long mid-ranger, I think it's gone a long way for him. And Justin Holiday said during practice, that the thing that stands out to him is how little wasted movement there is right now. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because he feels confident at, like, he has a shot he likes at each level now. And so he's doing a little less, like, what should I do with this? And more, this is either a three or it's a pump fake and a midi, or if there's a lane, I'm getting to the floater. And he feels very confident in that. And you can see it in these last handful of games.
I like that because maybe more than anything, to your point, he looks like he always knows what he wants to do now.
I think that's it.
There's no indecisiveness in his game. And that's really cool to see. He looks so comfortable out there in his role, in what he's being asked to do. He's well beyond, you know, well, maybe not, but it seems like he's well beyond the stretches of his season where he's looking over his shoulder, worried about making a mistake.
Yeah.
He's not really worried about getting pulled from games like he was in years past.
Even last year, there was a little bit of Bruce might close if you're not.
Right. That's one positive to a worse bench this year.
Yeah, I don't think we really haven't had that conversation at all, which is partially a credit to Mike and also, as you said,
Reggie's not closing over him.
No, we don't need to. Christian's really just waking up a little bit.
Right. Christian Brown took the first half of the season off, so he's not closing over him. Peyton Watson, still not like the trust there that I think you need from the coaching staff. So it's going to be Mike, but he's absolutely deserved it. Here's another question for you. Sure. What do you think his next evolution is? If this year is about him becoming a complete scorer. Do you have any thought about what the next evolution to his game might be?
I do, and it's not necessarily about a piece of his game that he's adding per se. It's something we've seen flashes of lately, and it's Porter actually becoming a second option on the nights when Murray's not available.
Yeah.
And I think for a long time, that was just a hopeful joke we made. He's going to take 40 shots tonight, but he had a hard time getting to his shots. He didn't have a lot of shots he liked. He right now, to me, you know, that Portland game, the game in the second half without Murray, he looks like a guy who's very confident in his ability to A, get open, and B, knock down shots. And that is a big, I think, area of growth for him. Ideally, you want Murray to be there on the floor, you know, as much as possible. But for stretches where he could maybe carry some offense without Murray out there, or games if you need it, I think we're seeing that a little bit of, you know, he can maybe scale up and down. Mm-hmm. Whereas before, he just finally learned how to fit into the role he was asked, but couldn't quite scale up. Maybe there's a touch more scalability than we thought a few months ago.
Well, there's a bit of a theory that Jamal Murray doesn't pass the ball to Michael Porter Jr.
Yeah, that
have too. You seen that theory?
I have, and that's actually not where I'm going with that.
Okay.
That's that, for me, it's more that Mike actually hasn't been very good without Murray.
Yeah.
Historically,
like, right? Do you remember that Minnesota game years back, or I think it might have been last year, where Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray were out of the lineup, and it was like, oh, it's going to be the Michael Porter Jr. show. Yeah, let's see what he can do as a first option. Here we go. High school Mike time. And it was a disaster.
Disaster. And you don't want that situation. But I feel like if that was the situation tonight, it would go a little differently. Mm-hmm. So those are the areas of growth where he looks a little less like, okay, I'll wait for a wide open shot. And a little more like, I know what to do on this possession.
Yeah.
And that's a world of difference, I think, for a guy who was mostly all talent in his, nascent years in his career.
It's really cool to step back and think about how he's just evolved as a player from the high school version of him.
Yeah.
I mean, going back to who he was then, he was the one of the greatest scorers the high school game has ever seen. He could do everything, you know, on the offensive end of the floor, and he was tasked with that. Threes, dunks, mid-range. I mean, he was an offensive machine in high school. That was his first, second, and third focus. And it's been really cool to see how in the NBA that has evolved and he's become a complete player. I think his next evolution might have a little to do with what you said and also him becoming more of a complete all-around player, but also having to do with his passing.
Mm.
We've seen a little bit of, you know, Michael Playmaker Jr. this season. He had 4 assists against the Lakers. He had 4 against the Bucks right before the All-Star break. We hadn't gotten many, you know, multi-4 assist games from him in years past. I feel like as he's become more comfortable in his role in this offense as a scorer, he's also just gaining a better understanding of the game. And look, that comes with every player. You get more years in the league, you get more reps, you get more comfortable. You see every defense multiple times year in, year out. And his ability to read the game now seems like it's at a really high level.
I agree. It's not just the number of assists. It's sort of how they're coming.
Yeah.
Some of these, as we've joked about on the show, are reads.
And yeah, he is making reads.
He is making
great reads.
And at the bar was once so low as to, can you make a read? And he's made several this season. And I think he's more confident in passing. I think he's kind of figured out how to get the ball to Jokic specifically.
Yeah.
In that they're both really tall, and Jokic is a space octopus, and he catches everything. So yep. Remember in the
good
years
comparison.
Past, the early, you know, Jokic iterations, the guards couldn't get Jokic the ball. And I think it's because they overthought everything, and then they'd pick up their dribble, then they'd get stuck, and they'd reset. And Mike's just like, well, he's going to catch it. And he just kind of lobs it up there. You know?
Yeah.
So there's something to that. But I do think he's seeing the game a little bit better. And the thing to remember with Porter as far as reps at high-level basketball is that he didn't really get that many in college. And then he essentially redshirted, and then he missed more time.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he's healthy, for a lot of it, it was – hey, we need you to do these 3 to 4 things. Don't do those other things. that's not conducive to like that's not Jeremy Grant getting to go to Detroit and spread his wings, right, and figure things out.
Right, because he's doing that, but he's not actually playing winning basketball.
Right, and but it's also like he didn't get that freedom to just go. Like Mike wasn't really supposed to make mistakes on the floor for a long time. Yep. And that making mistakes on the floor is sort of how you figure out some things, I think. And so I just think as his age and how long he's been in the league is a bit deceptive as to how many reps he's actually had.
I think that's a good point. I think that's a good point. When you said outlet passes, I just had flashback memories to just some dark days of early Jokic era basketball.
Dude, they couldn't do it.
Jameer Nelson was this team's best best, you know, passer into the post, best entry passer for like a 4-year period.
Well, I
remember. He was only on the team for 2 years.
The most eager Michael Malone was ever to talk to me when I first started this job. I was writing a piece on how no one can do entry passes anymore.
And he was like, hi, what's your name?
Yeah, he was like, here we go. He couldn't wait to get into that one. Yeah, he didn't know who I was, but he did agree strongly that the guards couldn't do it. I remember once I asked
when Jokic, I was at something Catholic, you know, in yeah. in Queens.
Yeah. One time I asked Jokic for that story. I asked Jokic, does it ever frustrate you how, you know, Jamal and Gary can't get you the ball? And Jokic just said, to be honest, yes. So we've come a long way.
I saw the worst outlet pass I've seen in a while last night in Lakers Thunder.
Oh, yeah. I kind of tuned out of that one towards the end.
Yeah, Lakers won. And it kind of exposed some deficiencies that the Thunder have. Like, they cannot defend any capable big.
Yeah.
And that's why I think the Nuggets would maybe sweep the Thunder.
Does seem relevant to that matchup.
Like, Anthony Davis looked like, you know, the best player in the world last night at times.
He did.
But Spencer Dinwiddie had maybe the worst pass into the post that I've seen this season.
That's right.
It was one of the worst I've ever.
Can we make a pact to not, like, as long as the Nuggets are this good, let's not worry about the buyout market.
I'm fine making that pact. Good luck roping other people into that, though.
I know.
Nuggets fans were ready to turn on Calvin Booth after he didn't sign Bismack Biyombo.
I know. I just, you know, and like, I love that Reggie was good this year when
he was
Jamal
in the,
was out.
The Thunder rotation last night, actually. 7 minutes. Minus 13.
But like, that pickup, as much as we like Reggie now, when especially when Jamal was out, that pickup didn't work last year either. Buyout guys are buyout guys for a reason. That's just a
good
note.
Dude, you should trademark that. That's a good line.
I don't think I came up with it.
Okay. Let's hit a break. More Michael Porter Jr. talk on the other side. Guys, at Bet365, they're never ordinary, and they've got some awesome offers going on for you right now. You can do a bet and get offer, place a bet of $5 or more, get $150 in bonus bets, or first bet safety net offer, place a bet up to $1,000. If your qualifying bet loses, you get a bet matched refund in bonus bets. We got a Nuggets game tonight. Nuggets Suns. Little steam taken out of this matchup with no Devin Booker and just how depressing the Suns are. But the Nuggets are an 8.5-point favorite tonight against the Suns.
You know what? I love it.
I love it too. I hope the Nuggets run it up on the Suns tonight.
I do too.
I hope they beat the Suns by 50 tonight.
And I feel like the Suns at this very moment in time, especially with the Devin Booker injury, are very eager to fold, like in any given game.
They want
to
fold.
If you give them a strong first and then you take the second quarter seriously, that might be enough. So I'm with you, man. I think they can win this one big.
I was looking at the injury report last night. I forgot to see if it was updated today, but Devin Booker's obviously out. Yusef Nurkic was questionable. I'm really curious if he's going to duck.
If Nurk ducks Jokic the game after having 31 rebounds, he lost. Swear to God.
He's still questionable.
Here we go.
Right calf tightness. We'll see.
Here we go.
We'll see.
Man, they lost the Bradley Beal 30 ball and the Nurkic 30 rebound game. That's tough.
Must be 21 plus, physically located in Colorado. Please gamble responsibly. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text 1-800-GAMBLER. Also, check out Factor Meals. They're perfect for people who work a lot, who don't have a lot of time to cook, like myself. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Factor meals taste great. They don't taste like your classic frozen meal that you stick in the microwave and eat. It tastes like an actual gourmet meal that you cooked. No, you can go to their website. They have so many different types of meals to choose from. And the best part is you just put them in your microwave, 2 minutes, they're good to go. Go to factormeals.com/DNVR50, factormeals.com/DNVR50. Get 50% off your order. What I would recommend, order up Factor Meals. Just eat them for like a week. See what you think. That's what I did, and I love them. Factormeals.com/DNVR50, 50% off your order. All right, back here on the Denver Sports Podcast, Harrison Wynn and Brendan Vogt. Yes, I do hope the Nuggets beat the Suns by 50 points. I want to blow them out. I want to push them even further down the standings. Phoenix is like, they're flirting with the play-in.
I know.
The play-in is a real, real possibility for them.
They're in the play-in right now. They're the
seventh
seed right now.
And Booker, what is it, 7 to 10 days? That's serious.
And that 5 through 10 is like only like 2 games apart. So like they could realistically end up like 8 or 9 if things go poorly.
That team is so screwed, man. This was like the year they had to win it too.
I know. But they were never going to, you know? They were never going to. That team was always a, you think about the standards we held this Nuggets team to in this regular season. And to the point where we were like, are we sure they're even? And then you think about all the boxes the Suns have yet to check, which is, first of all, just be good. Let alone are you a contender. You got to prove that they're good.
Well, now they've just decided we're not checking any boxes. We're just going to talk ourselves into potentially being healthy when the playoffs start and just everything coming together then.
They don't have a choice, man. That's like,
they don't.
Yeah. They don't have a choice. They are talented, and that matters. But I just, against, you know, a team like Denver, against some of the teams out west, good luck.
This was always how this was going to happen, though. Like, shout out Stat Squatch, Jay Coyne, but he put out something before the season where he's like, if you just take, like, he made an equation basically that said, if you just take all the games missed from these three guys over the last couple seasons, they're only expected to play 18 games together this year.
Yeah.
And like, they're going to end up playing less than that.
Yeah.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah. That is crazy.
The bottom line is they just did not need Bradley Beal. That's the Kevin Durant trade. Say what you want about it, but I feel like you could have still put together a contender this year if you did not make the Bradley Beal trade. And like, shout out our PHNX guys. They're great. But one thing I think they miss is that they always have said, oh, they had to trade for Bradley Beal. They had to make that trade. Look what they gave up. You know, Chris Paul and Landry Shamet. Like, that's the best they could have done. Yeah, that's the best you could do if you're a random team that needs a 30-point per game scorer.
Sure.
What they should have done is gotten a guy who fits better, who doesn't need the ball, who gives you some more size, who's a better defender. Doesn't matter. Like, yeah, and that guy might have been, quote-unquote, worse than Bradley Beal, but he would have been a much better fit for what you needed.
It's a great, I mean, no Nuggets
fan. And he didn't have a no-trade clause either. He wouldn't have had that.
No Nuggets fan needs this explained to them, but that's why you, like, filling out a 3-4-5 the way Denver did, are any one of those players in a vacuum better than Bradley Beal? Yep. No,
it's not about getting the best,
but it's not about,
things need to fit.
And you already know that Porter and Gordon are willing to do the things that Brad Beal is just trying to get on the floor. But is he willing to be a strong defender? Is he willing to be like a, you know, just an off ball threat? And all those things, you know, those were questions that should have factored in.
What do you think about Michael Porter and how he's been able to accept the role he has with this Nuggets team as, at best, a third option, you know, because we talked about this a little earlier, but Michael Porter Jr. was a number one option, the number one ranked player in high school. That guy, Michael Porter, was that dude his entire basketball career before he got to the NBA. Goes to a team that was already on the rise, that was already good, gets picked 14th overall, and has to be, you know, a secondary, tertiary option. How impressed have you been with his willingness to accept that over the years?
To be honest, I think it all traces back to his mentality about the initial injuries. And they seemingly immediately humbled him, right? He adjusted his perspective, I think, very quickly on what his career was going to be like, mm-hmm. what he could expect of himself. And I think in that, you know, your idea of what a successful career is probably starts to change. That part he gets credit for. Here's a part where he, you know, caught a little luck, which is a hard, weird word to apply to a guy with that injury history, but going to Denver, going to a team that was always going to teach him what winning basketball was, going to a team that was going to give him a chance to win rings in a city that had never seen a title or a banner before in basketball. That's a different way to have the career you always wanted, right? Even if you don't get to really chase ghosts the way maybe he thought about, right, when he was still a junior, senior in high school. So I think the injury, you know, would be devastating to a lot of people, but he clearly loves the game enough that rather than saying, all right, I'm done, it's what kind of player am I going to be going forward? And then when he gets to Denver, he had no choice, right? It's Jamal and Jokic's team, and he's got to figure out how to play the right way just to stay on the floor. I think where he gets credit is minimizing the complaining. Mm-hmm. But again, I would also say there's credit due to Tim Connelly, who paid him early. And that goes a long way. Like, it's a lot easier to accept your role and limit your shots and take your lumps and maybe be unfairly criticized when you already have the max contract in the bank. And so I think while obviously that changes the way you build out your roster 1 through 15, and it's going to put them in a tough spot with the cap sheet eventually, I think it also eliminated a lot of these questions. I think it also, it made it easier for him to just say, this is my lot in the NBA, you know, and I'm prepared to take it head on, face it head on.
Yeah. If you look back at when he got traded or when he got paid, it's so interesting because the Nuggets paid him early. They could have waited until the next year to pay him. And of course, that next year is when he got injured,
right,
I believe. So they could have paid him a lot less than he's actually making, which in the long run actually could have helped the Nuggets out a ton.
A ton. A ton.
But hey, they got a championship out of it. And, you know, Michael Porter is a really almost perfect fit, it feels like, next to who the Nuggets have.
Right. The way I look at it, you're paying to keep that five together, you know, and eventually who's making what matters. But for now, it's the best starting five in Denver Nuggets history. It's the first banner in Denver Nuggets history title. And it's because those five guys are together. So yeah, in that sense, to me, it's worth every penny.
Yeah. I do think though, there was probably a point, and this would be a good question to ask him actually. There's probably a point in maybe it was his second year, his third year, where the switch flipped for him and he really prioritized winning. I think that message really just settled in with him at some point. And like from then on, there was just, I got to go back and find out when that point was, but it seems like there's probably an inflection point along the way. And from then on, he was just totally bought in.
Yeah.
He was all about winning. Maybe it was after he got paid. I don't care about my stats.
Right.
Even though, you know, everybody cares a little bit about their stats. Like, come on. I just want to do what I need to do for us to be as good of a team as possible. And like that for me is probably when the whole thing really
changed,
clicked for him.
But I think I honestly think it's probably those factors we just talked about. I think getting paid and then playing with Jokic and Murray after the injury and realizing, look, I'm not going to set scoring records. I'm not going to lead the league in scoring. Not going to play for 15 years. I can win. I can be a winning player right out of the gate.
Yeah.
And I'm paid to be a winning player. And so I think all of that, I almost feel bad using words like luck because the injury history is horrible, but there is a bit of a perfect storm kind of thing of him ending up in Denver and the way it's all worked out.
Yeah. Do you remember who the Nuggets almost drafted instead of Michael Porter Jr.? Were you covering that?
I was covering. I don't remember at the time who. I know we all wanted SGA, but that was never going to happen.
I wonder if the chat remembers who the Nuggets almost drafted.
I can't. I really can't.
Do you remember Kale?
I don't. I remember watching the draft. I was at Flick's Brewhouse, my place of employment in college.
Shout out
Flick's Brewhouse. But and I was stoked when they drafted MPJ, but I don't remember who they almost took.
Zaire Smith.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, Oh, yeah. Man.
Who's playing for the Cavs G League team right now. And who almost died. He had like a crazy peanut allergy.
It wasn't the Sixers that almost killed him, right?
Or maybe not peanut allergy, but some type of allergy when he was with the 76ers. He almost died.
Yeah. Shout out the Sixers. Just an unbelievable, chaotic organization.
That draft night was crazy, though, because if you remember, the Nuggets were picking 14th overall in 2018. The Clippers had two picks before the Nuggets that year at 12 and 13.
Yeah.
If you remember, one of those picks turned out to be Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who turned into Paul George. Good pick. The other pick turned out to be Jerome Robinson.
I will remember that one forever.
Who was a terrible draft pick, and we all knew was a terrible draft pick at the time.
Dude, that is an unbelievable, unbelievable sliding doors moment in Denver Nuggets history.
I know. They could have had a guy who almost died.
Or Jerome Robinson. And they got Michael Porter Jr. By the way, this is for all the things that, you know, Tim is an imperfect GM for sure. They all are. But for as much as his freewheeling kind of cowboy shit can get him in trouble, this is also why he was the man. They're picking at 14. And he's like, look, we're the Denver Nuggets. Yeah. Am I taking Jerome Robinson or am I taking Michael Porter Jr.?
Right. I actually think they might have taken Troy Brown Jr. if they didn't take Michael Porter or Zaire Smith. He was higher on their board, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, it all worked out. It all worked out.
Did you find anything out about Zaire Smith?
Yes, it was an allergic reaction. It does not specify whether it was peanuts, but it was I think a I just nut, threw peanuts in there. Allergy.
Safe guess. Yeah, let's go peanut. I'm going peanut.
And yeah, he basically like almost died, and then they like immediately traded him.
I wasn't kidding.
They immediately traded him right after that happened.
Dude.
he just like wasn't good also.
Unless you're from Philly, you shouldn't feel good about getting drafted by the Sixers.
Dude, Michael Porter, do you think he survives Philly?
No, not a chance in hell.
Yeah.
He's Ben Simmons, dude.
Oh,
not really. I think he's proven he's not that guy, but that's more about Philly.
But Philly's such a sick place where they would have like rode him out of town, you know?
Yeah, they would have done it not the way Denver did it. I'll tell you that. I don't know what it would have looked
Denver
like.
Denver was ironically the best place.
The best place, man. The best place.
Yeah. A story from that draft, though, you credited Tim Connelly, who deserves a ton of credit. Josh Kroenke deserves a ton of credit as well.
Mm.
Because Michael Porter Jr. went to Missouri. Josh Kroenke went to Missouri. And Josh, like he is every year, was in the Nuggets draft room, the war room, that night. And the story as it's told to me is like, when you're picking a guy like Michael Porter and you're a GM and you're potentially picking a guy who a team doctor of the team who just passed on him two times, said that he might never play in the NBA and you already know he probably needs another back surgery. Yeah. If you're picking a guy like that as a GM at a pick as high as 14 in the lottery, you need buy-in completely from your owner. Mm. Like you just need everybody on the same page if you're making a draft pick like that. If you're taking Zaire Smith, yeah, who cares? Like Tim Connelly could have just made that pick. But if you're taking Michael Porter, a guy that an NBA doctor went on record with other doctors and said that this guy might never play, you need your owner on board. And Josh Kroenke was on board and goes, make the pick.
Yeah, that's a great point, man. And conceivably signed off on the extension on the max as well.
Yeah.
I'm sure Tim's not just like getting that deal done without checking.
Just slipping it under the
by the way,
under the door.
Quick update on the team. So
what kind of transactions are you working on? The Michael Porter extension? Oh yeah, that's done actually.
Oh, that's done. Oh, what did we land on?
Did that last week. Yeah. Nobody looped you in, Josh?
You haven't seen Mark Bartlestein's new boat?
Oh, you were in London. That's right.
That's right. You are on your own boat.
That's right. Yeah, it's absolutely worked out. And then do you remember the stories from the summer when Michael Porter was drafted. And I guess it was the year after, because he is out the whole rest of the season. And then the year after, we start hearing the stories over the offseason about how he's just cooking everybody in open runs.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Everybody's like, who's the best player in the gym? Well, this dude, Michael Porter, is just dominating the scrimmages.
I had heard that some folks were calling him Franchise. that was his open run nickname.
Who gave him that nickname? Was it Will Barton?
Let's not kid ourselves. That's a stupid probably question. Will. Yeah.
Stupid question.
We got our answer. Probably wasn't Jamal.
Jamal probably wasn't passing him the ball.
No, he wasn't. No. Hey, they've come a long way, man. They've come a long way.
Yeah.
Jamal had 5 assists to Porter in that last one.
Wow.
And 4 were for threes. And the first 3 were Porter's first 3 threes of the game. So a little bit of growth. And then after the game, he was asked about it. And he talked about the growth that both of those guys have had, not just trusting him, but seeking him out, mm-hmm. getting him the ball. So it's a fun development.
Let's hit another break. I'll get to some final thoughts on MPJ. We got a super chat as well. We'll hit on the other side of this. Guys, it's a great time to become a DNVR diehard. You get so many perks, and one of those perks is a free t-shirt every single year. I don't know if you've seen our latest drop, our latest t-shirt. D-Line cooked up a masterpiece with this one. The Who's Your Daddy shirt after beating the Lakers in 8 straight games. A beautiful shirt. A beautiful piece of art. It is in the conversation of my favorite shirts.
He's done. It's in the conversation, huh?
Yeah. This one, the Aaron Gordon one, which is an all-timer. Yeah, it's in the conversation. But you also get 20% off all events. You get access to the content behind the paywall on thednvr.com. You can read roundtables from us every single week. Our pure, unfiltered thoughts on the Nuggets. 20% off all events as well. If you're local, you get a discount on your bar tab too. Go to thednvr.com and sign up to become a diehard. $7 a month. It's a great investment, and it helps support us. So if you like what we do here at DNVR, that is the best that's the best way to support us. Also, shout out to Breck Brew, the official beer of DNVR. The beer of the month is the Avalanche Amber. Get it while it's hot. You can get it here at the DNVR bar. You can get it wherever Breck Brew is sold. If you don't know where to get Breck Brew, check out their beer locator. Just type in your zip code. It shows you exactly where to get Breckenridge Brewery. All right, back here on the Denver Sports Podcast, Harrison Wind and Brendan Vogt were presented by Breck Brew. Talking about Michael Porter Jr., let's hit that super chat, Kale. Can we hit that real quick here? $50.
Whoa.
Holy shit. You're going to make me feel like MPJ Rich from Nikola Nuggets MPJJJ.
Dude. J. Look at that enthusiasm. Look at that enthusiasm. Man.
Thank you.
Winning a title just changes everything. Everyone's a hero. Everyone's happy.
Here's a question for you. Do you think Michael Porter, let me back up for a second.
Yes. Oh, wait.
Let me back
up. Okay.
We love this Nuggets starting five. It's incredible. It's the reason they won a championship last year. You know, probably the third reason after Jokic, then Jokic Murray, then the starting five. We know that, like, we probably can't keep the starting five together forever. That's just how the NBA works. Who do you think is the most dispensable player in the starting five? Is it Michael Porter or is it somebody else?
I mean, it is. You could argue it's Porter. The thing about Porter on that contract is that he has far more valuable to the Denver Nuggets than he has to anyone else. He fits well, and who else is going to trade for that max on that injury history if you don't know what the fit looks like? So that's probably the argument for Porter sticking around, like really sticking around. It's just that it might be hard to move him. And I have thought about Peyton Watson growing into an Aaron Gordon role over time.
Sure.
But skill set wise, it's probably Porter. It's probably Porter. But I will say that people overlook the fact that you might find another guy who can play some defense and shoot, but is he going to be nearly 7 feet tall? And that is a really important part of what makes Denver really difficult to match up with. I'm not going to say Gordon because Gordon is basically the third arm of the two-man game. He's such an important part of everything they do. But I will say on the roster, I think they're closer to having an AG replacement in Peyton than they are a Porter replacement.
And on the roster right now, they're probably closer to having a KCP
replacement. A KCP replacement as well. I kind of forgot about him in this conversation. So
It's an impossible question. I hate it, but it's something I've been thinking about. You know, just looking ahead to next season, which is already getting too far ahead of myself, and thinking about, you know, the fact that KCP might bolt unless he gives the Nuggets a little hometown discount. We'll see. But Porter's size
is important.
Is the X factor, I feel like, in his game. Because if he was doing what he was doing at 6'7", 6'8", he's not looked at, I think, you know, anything close to the same realm as he is now.
You can replace that.
His size is so important to his game and to what the Nuggets do. And right now, size is almost having a moment in the NBA. Agree. We're so far beyond like the small ball revolution, the small ball era. Ty Lue, the head coach for the Clippers, might think we're still in the small ball era. We're not. That might be the Clippers' downfall in the end.
Yeah, for real.
But Porter being 6'10", 6'11", Aaron Gordon being 6'8", 6'9",
yep.
Nikola Jokic being 7', the size that the Nuggets have in their front line, it's so huge to their identity, and taking Porter away changes just the feel of the team.
And for most teams to get that big, they have to jeopardize their spacing. And so that's the Porter kind of superpower.
Yeah.
And what, and to that point, this year, he's up almost 2 full rebounds per game from last year. And I feel like you were talking about he looks a more complete player. He looks way more comfortable to me attacking size mismatches, whether that's in the mid post or just taking them off the dribble or just shooting over the top of them. He looks way more comfortable now saying, like, Anthony Simons, you're too small. That goes a really long way. Because, again, most teams trying to get that big in their front court get clunky in the offense. And Denver's ability to do that without what their, you know, their well-oiled two-man game breaking down is part of what makes them special.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When do you think Michael Porter is going to be in his peak? Because he's 25. That's something that sometimes we forget, is that he's only 25 and he's not even technically in his peak or, you know, necessarily close to it. Or do you think how he's playing now is kind of the peak of what people should expect from him throughout his career?
I think he's probably close to the peak or the ceiling, but there are areas of hope and we've outlined them on this show. he does look like he reads the game a little bit better. He's never going to be a passer, but can he be a guy that can make passes? So that's, you know, I think being a more complete scorer, you know, just a more comfortable with his size, that can all add it up to, you know, maybe a couple more points per game, better rebounding numbers. But there is going to be a limit on, A, he just missed out on so many crucial developmental minutes. Mm-hmm. And B, what he's asked to do in Denver, no matter how much he grows on in within that, there is a ceiling on it. So, and then his health, which matters a lot.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say he's probably close to it, but I do think he can get better.
I think he can get better too. I mean, just naturally, I think you get better every year you spend in the NBA, you know, to a certain point when your athleticism begins to go.
Yeah.
He's on a great run of health right now. He's improving, like getting better, you know, every week right now. So it's been a fun story to track this season. It's been one of the coolest stories of the year so far. Absolutely.
This coming out of the break, I think part of what's made me feel more confident in Denver is Jamal Murray, the way they've been playing, but then also seeing Porter look this confident. Because the weirdest thing, the dip in production was never that bad. The weirdest thing was watching him become indecisive in the first third, watching him overthink and not taking open jumpers. And lately, I'm back to a place now where if he takes one, I think it's going in. Mm-hmm. And strangely, I had lost that feeling at some point in the season, but I do think it's back.
Right. When Michael Porter shoots like 38%, we're like, what the hell, man?
I know. It feels like he hasn't hit a shot in
months.
Can
this guy hit a shot?
On 7 attempts, right? But now, and then he goes 5 for 5, and we're like, that's what I'm talking about. You know, probably won't go 5 for 5 every night. But I do think he's feeling it again.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling it watching him.
Yeah. The Nuggets right now are in a portion of their schedule, the stretch run, where they play every other day for pretty much the entire rest of the season. They play.
It's every other day till April 9th, and they've got a back-to-back. And then after that, the next like 4 games, which are the last 4 games, are every other night.
Wow. Right. So they have one back-to-back remaining. Of course, it's against Minnesota on April 10th after they're in Utah April 9th. Other than that, though, every other day they have a game. They're in the stretch run for sure.
I like this, dude.
You like the every other day?
I feel like the Nuggets are best when they're in that kind of rhythm.
Yeah.
Too many back-to-backs adds up and all that. But just every other... When they have too much rest, they come out and they play very annoyingly.
Yeah.
And so I like the... They're so locked in right now that I think every other day is just going to hopefully keep them in some kind of a rhythm here.
They also have a game at the Clippers on April 4th, which is their fourth matchup against the Clippers this season, but their third matchup against the Clippers in LA. Mm. They played the Clippers 4 times. Three of those are in LA. Whatever. That's messed up,
man. That is messed up. But the Clippers need all the help they can get in that matchup.
That's stupid in-season tournament.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy. That's all I got. You got anything else?
Just a question.
Anything else you want to get off your chest?
Just a question for you. Do you think that was a great 6 games, or do you think in some respects he turned a corner? I know he's not going to shoot 100% every night, but do you feel good about Mike from now until April?
Yeah. I think it was a point of demarcation in his season.
Yeah, there we go.
I think it was a point that we'll probably look back on. I just feel like he hit the level he needed to hit for like the Nuggets to win the championship.
Yeah, I agree. That's how I feel.
And I feel like he's probably going to stay at this level for the rest of the season.
I do too. Or at least I'm hopeful.
Yeah. All right. Kale, you got anything else?
Yeah, Mike.
All right. Guys, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for hanging out with us here on the Denver Sports Podcast. Thanks to Brendan Vogt for joining me today.
That was fun, man.
We'll be back later this week with another episode. Hopefully, you'll have some more guests on the show. I think that's on Friday at 12. That's when we're penciled in for now. But thanks for hanging out in the chat. Thanks for the super chat. Thank you so much for the super chat.
Yeah, for real.
Nicola Nuggets. Really appreciate it. We'll talk to you guys on Friday.
y'all silly like the mayor.